Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. We design, craft and install beautiful kitchens. cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Now, intensive efforts are underway to secure the release of Irish woman Gina Herity, who was kidnapped from the orphanage where she worked in Haiti. Gina was taken along with seven colleagues and a three-year-old child. A native of Cushla near Westport in County Mayo, the community has been left shocked by the news. And for more on this, I'm joined by Father John Kenny, administrator of Westport Parish in County Mayo, who knows Gina and the Herity family. Good morning, Father John.
Good morning, Colm. Good morning, listeners.
When did you hear about the kidnapping? And I suppose, I think you said last night, when you heard an Irish woman was missing, you suspected the worst.
This was it, yes. I heard it on your own news on RTE and then and ringing some people locally because I suspected it might be Gina. She is well known in our parish area as well as in Cushla and Agour. And we were all saddened and shocked to hear it was her that was among the Irish, well, the Irish lady that was kidnapped with the others.
And what was the mood like amongst the congregation last night?
Well, they were there in great solidarity and great numbers. Father Brittis, the local priest there, the administrator, has a mass at 7 o'clock on a Monday evening and would have a small attendance. But yesterday evening, cars were everywhere. People were gathered and quietly prayed and then met with the family afterwards. The evening was a nice evening, a quiet evening. The storm has passed over us here, the weather storm, I mean. So they had the opportunity to meet with her siblings and her extended family and kind of console them and chat to them and reassure them of our prayers and our support.
And Mary Herity Rafter, Gina's sister, was very grateful for the consolation that was offered by the congregation there. She spoke last night at the Mass.
She did, and was maybe a little bit nervous about even to speak because of her just very on tender hooks that anything said or done or anything would upset the situation in any way, even at this great distance with social media and coverage and media, you just would be worried. So the family are very appreciative of the support and very conscious that people are praying and supporting them as we can.
You've met Gina yourself a number of times over the years, have you?
I have. She's not one for the spotlight or to highlight herself. It's always the work she does that she draws attention to and the people she works with. Any fundraising events that we support, the local schools, the local communities constantly are generous to her cause and the cause she works for. And reluctantly, as I said, she kind of has to come forward to do that. But it's never for herself. It's never for her own benefit. It's always for the benefit of others. That's just the nature of the person she is, a wonderful, generous, caring, compassionate person, a great human being, you could say.
There must be great pride in the community in her and the work she's doing. I know it's got recognition over the years, but including Humanitarian of the Year on one occasion, but the community and their fundraising and everything else must be very proud of what she's doing in Haiti, especially in such difficult circumstances.
Certainly, yes. So many of us would love to do something like she's doing, maybe at one level, but would never get around to doing it. I believe her career or her vocation, her mission was temporary to begin with. She went out on an assignment for about 6 months and then it took off from there. She just fell in love with the people, fell in love with what she was doing and has continued for the last, well, since 1993. It's just amazing. And that's the kind of person she is and has become, a person for others.
And no stranger to danger in her time there, as you say, over 3 decades there, and it's a pretty turbulent part of the world. She already survived a brutal assault after a break-in in the orphanage where she works, and she stayed on.
This is true, and we wouldn't know all the ins and outs of what goes on there, but we are conscious that it's very an area that's there's a lot of unrest and unease, and then all the storms and various terrible natural events that happened too over the years. That's, I suppose, we're conscious of those events too, and we're worried about her physical concerns there, that there would be storm damage and flooding and all kinds of things. But then, yes, the unrest and the unease of the local situation. I'm not familiar with all the ins and outs, but there seems to be a lot of conflict and a lot of groups vying for authority and leadership in the communities.
And did you get any insight into the fulfilment or the satisfaction she got from her work in all the times you were talking to her? What kept her going, a sense of what kept her motivated?
Well, only recently when she was home on her last visit to home, I met her at the local school in Bracloon, and where the young children there had done fundraising for her cause. And she spoke about her mission and her work, and it was just wonderful. You could see her beaming with enthusiasm and energy around what she does. But like I said, never looking for the credit to herself, but always drawing attention to the cause and to the what she does.
And of course, looking after some of the most vulnerable people in Haiti, people who have in many cases can't be cared for by their families or who have been abandoned indeed.
This is it. And I think the poor people there, it's not that they abandon them as such out of selfishness, but out of complete necessity to survive themselves. They have to let others go. And it's just incomprehensible for us here to think that flesh and blood people have to let their own go from them. But they obviously respect her and the work she does. At least they have that silver lining to look to her or people like her to take over from where they cannot have their own people.
All right, Father Kenny, listen, thanks very much for joining us this morning. Much appreciated.
Thank you, Colin.
I mean, thanks to Father John Kenny, Administrator of Westport Parish in County Mayo. And we're also joined by Katrina Dowd, Assistant Professor at the School of Politics and International Relations in UCD. Katrina, can you tell us maybe a bit about the political and security situation in Haiti, why it is as turbulent as it is?
Hi, thanks. I can. I just want to say, of course, this is a very worrying situation and an ongoing one. So out of respect for the sensitivity, I think we've just heard about, it was alluded to. I won't comment on the specifics, but I suppose just keeping it in the broader context, Haiti's been facing a political crisis since 2021. And since that time, we've seen a real intensification of violence across the country. And that's tied to a whole range of the armed groups that are operating across the context. And it has had a particular toll on civilian populations and their humanitarian needs. So particular challenges among vulnerable populations and what it is. And of course, those who are trying to meet those needs of those communities and the difficulties in the midst of that unrest.
All right. I think about 5,600 dead is the figure from violence in 2024 alone. As you say, 2021, there was the assassination of a president. There have been attempts to stabilize the situation with the intervention of a UN police force. But is it correct to say there are active discussions ongoing within the United Nations to upgrade the presence there into a full peacekeeping operation?
There are discussions. I think I suppose that's been that was delayed. So there have been challenges around that deployment that was delayed in terms of the deployment and quite the shape that it will take or whether or not that will evolve. I think that's under discussion again. I think the situation with the international response is sort of also combining with a lot of vulnerability in those communities themselves and real challenges. In that context, I guess we don't know and we can't quite speculate on what exactly will happen in terms of the UN mission.
Right.
But it's very much fluid, yeah.
Is it possible to talk about who the main players are in the conflict in Haiti? Are there any major players driving the violence, or is it a lot of disparate gangs who have just capitalized on the breakdown of law and order?
It's certainly a very fluid situation. So a very large number of different groups operating. What we've seen since March 2025 has been an expansion in the territory that has been affected by violence in particular. So we've seen sort of in the last few months an increase in violence that's associated with sort of broadening of armed group, non-state armed group kind of control and presence outside of the capital where it had been concentrated. But it's a very fluid situation, even more so than many crises where you have different groups forming alliances, forming coalitions and shifting. So really something that's evolving kind of almost day to day and a lot of uncertainty as well. And that's one of the reasons I think there's a lot of caution about sort of speculating even in general when analysts are talking about the situation in Haiti. There's a huge amount of caution because it's not always clear who's involved. Violence is often not attributed or it's not claimed. People may be very reluctant to report violence. So we really don't even have always the information that we can kind of count on to sort of reliably sort of understand the full picture.
And kidnapping's not uncommon.
No, sadly, kidnapping's not uncommon. UN reports have highlighted this. Human rights reports have highlighted this. Aid agencies have highlighted this. So it's been a persistent issue. And again, you know, what we actually know in terms of the numbers and how common this is probably only a small portion of the overall level of that form of violence, because again, people may be reluctant to report it. We may not even have, through UN monitoring, a full picture of that. But sadly, not uncommon, a dangerous place to be an aid worker, and a challenging environment for, you know, kidnappings certainly aren't limited to that group. We see kidnappings reported for people going about their daily lives, trying to go about their business. You know, it's just a dangerous place to, I suppose, be moving around. That's one of the sort of perhaps lesser known kind of aspects of the insecurity, is that a lot of roadblocks and a lot of insecurity might mean it's very difficult for people to move around and go about their daily lives, and then kind of go about their business, go to markets, travel, you know, get to hospitals, get access kind of to basic services, can make that very difficult when there's that level of violence. And that, of course, compounds then the vulnerability of households facing an economic crisis, facing high levels of food insecurity, not having a good access to healthcare. We know that health facilities have been shut down or very significantly reduced across the country as a result of violence. So all kinds of essential services being eroded, if not sort of destroyed across the country in the midst of this violence. And then on top of that, the people are facing the violence itself.
Yeah. And finally, then, the people would be aware, people would remember the 2010 earthquake, and Haiti is, I suppose, affected by climate change, given the region it's in as well. A lot of hostile factors in the natural environment confronting people who are already dealing with all of those factors like poverty and insecurity that you've talked about.
Absolutely. Many people in Ireland might associate Haiti with the 2010 earthquake, which was devastating, but sadly only one in a series of crises that have affected the country in the past few decades, really. I mean, in 2016, Hurricane Matthew, that might also have sort of registered with people, left so many people without homes in the midst of a humanitarian funding shortfall. In 2021, there was another earthquake. And in the midst of all of this, there are smaller, you know, they may not get international news attention, but still really damaging extreme weather related things like flooding, landslides, a whole range of things that are sort of shock after shock. If you imagine a community under stress who are experiencing shock after shock, that's eroding their ability to recover. I think that's a really important thing to consider, that communities who maybe have been displaced, households who've had to leave their homes and go back and rebuild, then what they rebuild may still be in the midst of rebuilding, or they may be in the midst of sort of kind of trying to put their lives back together, and another shock comes along and erodes that further. So there's really a question about kind of the resilience of communities. Mm. How can we support that resilience when people are facing so many shocks and so many crises, weather related, but also in the wider context?
Right. And all the more concerning then that people who are working for humanitarian organisations find themselves placed at risk as well. Okay, Catriona Dowd, Assistant Professor at the School of Politics and International Relations in UCD, thanks for joining us this morning. Coming up, a powerful reminder of the risks of melanoma and why you need to be sun smart this summer.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.